Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you, of course, by globalresearch.ca. Today, my guest is John McMurtry. John is back again, and I'm delighted to have him. For those who don't know John, he's Professor Emeritus of the University of Guelph in Ontario, Canada. He's a moral philosopher, an ethicist, an outspoken critic of the New World Order, and a vocal activist for global justice, world peace, and international law. What better things to be an activist for? He's written a number of books, and I've read two of these three. Let me mention three of them. I've read two of the three, the latter two. They include Unequal Freedoms, The Cancer Stage of Capitalism, and Value Wars. John, welcome to the program. There's so much going on. I'm going to let you take the lead and go in whatever directions you wish.
Well, let me begin with one that is very much in the news right now, which is, I'm glad to see that actually these questions are arising, the double standard with respect to the money handouts from the federal government to basically the Treasury, to the auto companies and to the banks. And nobody can understand why the auto companies are, their chief, in the case of General Motors, is being fired, that they're only being given loans, and the loans are subject to recall, and they just have been recalled, and all kinds of specifications made about what they must do, all of which I agree with, by the way. But what one can agree with, and I think just about the whole American public is starting to wonder, why are they not touching the banks? Why, when 50 times more is directly handed out to the banks and the Wall Street black hole, why are there no terms and conditions? They, even as we now infamously know, gave themselves, you know, you can go through the whole set of them. You know, whether they're Merrill Lynch before or after, they've been bought out with money, government money to be under the control. Everybody's paying themselves millions of dollars of bonuses with government money under absolutely no direction at all that one can discern, no conditions. And it's a real anomaly. Why would such a blatant double standard be allowed to prevail in the face of growing public outrage and, you know, clarity of a double standard?
John, I have my
Well, I'm going to give an answer to that.
Okay, you go ahead.
Because the one thing that we are able to do is deal with the unspeakable here, which is just never raised in the mass media, the corporate media. And the difference between Wall Street is, and it's never mentioned, is that Wall Street controls all kinds of foreign debt, including from third world countries. They run the whole, you know, basically have dominated the whole financial system with this this toxic system. And it's there, the debts that they can squeeze out of foreigners and the control they have over foreign money. And basically it's the financial, well, it is the financial backbone of the empire. It's probably more important than the military itself. And so the reason they're not closing down Wall Street or giving Wall Street any terms is basically to sustain the empire, the financial empire that has basically hollowed out the world as well as its own people. So it's that aspect of the whole financial crisis that we're going through, an economic crisis we're going through that nobody ever mentions.
John, we need to take a break. We will come back. It's a dirty, ugly piece of business. It obsesses me, and I'm on it all the time. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with John McMurtry. John, can I add one piece of possible good news, and then we'll come right back to this topic. I only hope this is true, and I only hope this follow-up from it. I'm not sure you know. I doubt most listeners know. There was a Reuters report yesterday that John Yell, former Deputy Assistant Attorney General under George Bush, one of the co-authors of a series of infamous torture memos justifying the use of torture. I've quoted directly from the two most infamous ones, but he was one of the lead players. He's now a law professor. He was arrested. He was arrested in Milan, Italy, and he's being held, and he could be held, according to the Milan prosecutor, for up to 90 days for possible extradition to Spain to be prosecuted along with five other ex-Bush officials under the legal category of universal jurisdiction. Now, I just hope these Italians and these Spaniards have the backbone to follow through on this.
Let me have three comments that are all relevant to this. One is, I agree with you, this is very good. This is one of the most important initiatives, and indeed I called for it in Value Wars, is to have international criminal law apply. And it's now finally being applied. This is a very important move. But I remind you that the United States has never signed on to the court, the International Court of Justice. It's an outlaw. It's lawless. This is outside the court, John.
This is outside the jurisdiction of the court.
But that's the first thing. The first thing is it's good. It's good. The second thing is notice who is the head of the prime minister of Italy is a billionaire thug and crook. He's going to not go along with this, I would suspect. And there'll be all kinds of resistance to it. And the third is this is a very important and interesting one to watch, because there is another new world order emerging in which the U.S. is not the arbitrary empire over everybody and can do what it pleases. And so I agree with you. This is an important thing to watch, but it's really at the surface of the deeper structural crisis. But nevertheless, very important.
John, I know Marjorie Cohn, current president of the National Lawyers Guild. She's been on the program a couple of times. I sent her an email this morning. She's a couple of hours behind us, 3 hours behind you in California. And she sent me an email back. She thought it was an April Fool's joke.
Oh, really?
I said, no, it was a Reuters report. I hope there's real meaning to this thing, but it came out of Reuters, so I hope they didn't completely botch it. But it certainly is significant. It just chips away at this terrible impregnable facade that we set up, that we can do any damn thing we please, John, and get away with it.
Yes,
but Berlusconi in Italy is a great obstacle. There's no question. There's also an effort in the Spanish legislature to craft a new law to stop the Spanish court from proceeding with what they're doing.
Well, but this is quite predictable, isn't it?
Oh,
and they may well succeed, but the principal thing is, I think, what you really started with is that at least, in terms of public relations and understanding, at least it's understood that there have been crimes against humanity and war crimes committed. That was formerly an unspeakable. And then I can give you an example of that. I had a debate on our national television, publicly owned, 2 days before the invasion on a Sunday. I think the invasion was on a Tuesday. And it was with, I'm not sure whether I've told this story on the program, but it was with one of the people who set up for the New American Century, the project for the New American Century. Well, they wouldn't, the idea of raising the term war crime and then going after this guy for advocating war crimes, which is also a crime under law, the guy who brought me on the program was fired. They excised certain crucial parts where I said you should be arrested. You know, they just eliminated it from the program in their 30-minute delay. And every newspaper I wrote, including the I mean, all the major newspapers, and The Guardian, who had often published me before in Britain, a more progressive paper, they just would not publish the concept of war crime, even as it was about to happen. All I said, very simply, is what is being planned and what is being projected as certain to happen is a crime under international law, and spelled out what the law was, and that will entail crimes against humanity. And indeed, the invasion was a non-defensive invasion of another kind is under law the supreme, and I'm quoting from the actual law, the supreme crime under law is an aggressive war. So they just wouldn't publish it, even in other countries, even in my own. So the fact that now we're getting to see, yes, indeed, it was a war crime and there were crimes against humanity, just that shift of public understanding is very important in itself.
The supreme international crime.
The supreme crime, and
a U.S. Supreme Court Justice, Robert Jackson, sat at the head of that Nuremberg Commission. And, you know, never again, the standard said.
Yes.
Well, that lasted about 2 seconds. And right away, we're back committing the same crimes.
Well, they used the foreign security apparatus of the Nazis, and 2/3 of their information came from Nazis, and they imitated the death squad method of the Nazis in Eastern Europe. I mean, it really has been. There's a lot of documentation to show that the U.S. really just took off where the Nazis ended in terms of their security intelligence and their methods.
Oh, indeed, and some of the Japanese figures too. Just bargain with them. Turn over your medical experiment secrets, and you can come to work for us. We'll pay you a big six-figure salary.
Yes, it's so obscene, and I've always thought when humanity looks back on what was going on in these times, and we're starting to get apocalypse means really uncovering. We're starting to uncover all this horror and of what's been going on. And it, for most people, I suppose, it's just inconceivable. But on the other hand, there's been a real change in terms of understanding it. Before, like a few years ago, before the Bush administration was still in, it was really unspeakable to say that the president had committed a war crime, or that his, I suppose that would still be an unspeakable. Here in Canada, a group that that I'm basically just a consultant to, but it was in Calgary when Bush came to appear for a private event. They set out, it was led by faculty at the University of Lethbridge. They made an attempt to arrest Bush for war crimes and making a civilian arrest. All the facts on war crime and crimes against humanity, the RCMP was advised of this by Lawyers Against the War. They had a full documentation of what his war crimes were. And the person who tried to arrest him is now in prison. So it's still a very touchy affair, but let's hope that the horizons keep opening towards truth and justice.
Oh, absolutely, John. We have to keep chipping away at this. We had a program about that. Michelle Chosudovsky hosted a program, I believe it was on March 17th, and had a woman from this group, a lawyer's group, isn't it?
Yes.
Gail Davidson, if I remember her name, had Gail on the program, and I rescheduled one of my guests, because Michelle wanted to have a program on the very day that Bush was due to show up in Canada.
Oh, yeah, well, you didn't, eh? Because that would have been good, yeah.
Well, we did that, and...
you did do that, great.
And indeed, as you said, we have to keep chipping away at this. If we keep doing it, sooner or later we're going to break through. Today, in London, of course, we've got the G20 meeting.
Yes.
And it's called Financial Fool's Day. Well, the Europeans, whether they're in London or Paris or most any European city, they're a lot gutsier than we are here.
Yes.
It was an AP report that people broke into the Royal Bank of Scotland. They were trying to get into the Bank of England. The best they could do, just a little bit that I read quickly, was they pelted it with eggs and other substances. But there are a lot of angry people in the streets of London today, and with good reason. Because my theory and what's gone on, John, and you know, they don't send me memos to confirm this. But my theory was that the crisis that we're going through now didn't happen by chance. This was planned.
I've certainly wondered that. You don't see that coming out anywhere as a question. But certainly, just as with 9/11, you see who the beneficiaries are. Like, if you were part of this financial, basically money managers and possessors controlling the world, you know, known as the masters of the universe, and things are going bad for them, why not just pull all the money, they have the means to do it, pull all the money out of the stock market and break the bank? Like, the biggest story here is the transfer of wealth from the public. You know, it's not as if we hadn't done enough of that, but the massive, unprecedented, you know, it's over $2 trillion they're giving to the Wall Street black hole to recapitalize them. And that this has gone on without any criticism at all in terms of the ratios are starting to arise, but just that this is the financial empire of the U.S. and it's to keep the claws in the back, really, of foreign debtors, especially the third world. This just does not arise. But on the other hand, we have something happening like Sarkozy has refused. I mean, he says he'll walk out if there isn't international regulation on financial flows. International regulation, and that the U.S. is resisting.
John, we need to break again. We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the NewsHour. I'm on with John McMurtry. John, you mentioned a couple of trillion. My newest article on the economy. I keep track of the order. I seem to get involved in so many topics at the same time, but it was one just before the end of March. I called it Obama's latest No Banker Left Behind scheme on the public private investment program, PPIP.
Well, they call it an assistant, an asset assistance program.
Oh, he is a banker-assisted crime of the century, getting bigger with each new handout program. But the number I use, and then Bloomberg topped it yesterday, the number I use was either pledged, handed out, or guaranteed $12.5 trillion.
Where did you get that?
Well, I got those numbers from Bloomberg earlier, and yesterday...
Bloomberg, the news program?
Bloomberg Online. It may either publish an on-air report, but it's Bloomberg that you can pick it up online. And
I guess with the guarantees and the backing and the insurance, it would come to that.
Oh, everything. Going back to AIG, Fannie and Freddie. It just goes on and on and on. Plus a quantitative easing, TARP and TALF and PPIP. And there's more, an American Recovery and Relief Act, Obama's mortgage plan, this stuff in the fiscal year 2010 budget, $250 billion in there. You get half a trillion for FDIC. It's on and on.
What day did Bloomberg report that? I'm just going to keep the note on that.
Well, they have one yesterday, March
31. March 31,
At $12.8 trillion.
12.8 now.
What they're really saying is, this number is rising daily. I mean, the next report will be over $13 trillion.
I'm glad they're. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's very interesting the power they have. Another story that's coming out, you know, this traveling to Cuba and so forth is maybe, hopefully, people see the connection. Notice that who is required to give passport approval to go to a foreign country that the U.S. doesn't want you to go to, like Cuba, the government doesn't, is the Treasury. And I think that's a sort of a publicly visible link between the Treasury and the foreign imperial policy. They control even passports. Now, if they control personal passports inside the country? Do you think they're going to have trouble controlling politicians, et cetera, with respect to giving them money and allowing it to go on, let alone what's an unspeakable is that if you don't do this, if you don't keep pouring it in, nobody can get money. You know, that's the one they're always giving, even though, you know, a public bank and public banks have been around forever and always work much better. A public bank could take over these loans and credit tomorrow. There wouldn't be any problem. And that they're just continuing this policy of occupation across the world and never mentioning the crucial thing, which is really that the empire's financial backbone of exploitation around the world, and it is the financial backbone of U.S. exploitation around the world at the financial level, which now is the ultimate value level. And that's the real thing, because if they can keep on going pouring the money in, basically the public is now on the hook for everything that they have blown, and in order to sustain their exploitative empire abroad that is, as you know, bleeding the rest of the world dry. I mean, this is really what the crisis has been, is a bleeding dry of everybody. Everyone who has demand, and this works right across all domains, everybody who's had demand inside the system has been cut back, fired, put on casual basis, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, pulling more out of third world African countries than they spend on their entire budgets and so on. They have bled the world dry. They've hollowed it out. And then there's no more demand left in the system to keep it going. The Wall Street used to say nobody's going to pay their debts on nobody's ever going to pay their debts. They're just going to learn to pay on time. That game worked well for them forever until what happened they never take account of. You are squeezing and hollowing out the demand factor across the world domestically and foreign. And that's what's caused the collapse. And now the public, having been hollowed out by this system, by a parasitic, really a carcinogenic operation, because it has no committed or productive function to reproducing the means of life, the public is now paying for that to continue. That's what it's really all about. The public are paying for the collapsed system to continue in its same old ways. And since everyone's been hollowed out, all we can go to is for the future debt of Americans.
These people want to do to people in this country what you just described that we've done to people around the world.
Well, they've made no distinction, really, from the beginning. Once these trade agreements, which, you know, are just basically corporate right diktats, because it's all made under treaty law with no, you know, really no ability of legislatures to control it. Once they did that, it basically allowed corporations all the rights, and labor had no rights. And notice what the way labor is being stripped in these auto companies and so forth.
Oh.
They've given away their pensions. They've given away their overtime. They've given away their health insurance. You know, but the program's continuing. Hollow out the world. Go broke. Get the world through now the public sector entirely to to buy in to this program so it can continue.
Oh, indeed.
I mean, that you can decode everything they say so the program can continue.
Oh, you can read. You want, the more they do, the easier it is to read their plan. We need to break again, John. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with John McMurtry. John, I think what's going on with GM right now and their union, I see another very sinister plot, and Obama is up to his eyeballs in it. And I think it really comes down to pretty simple stuff. Take GM into bankruptcy. Don't destroy the union, but destroy all of the benefits, or the big ones, the big expensive ones, of the workers, slash their pay down to third world standards, or maybe bring it down there incrementally, and then use that as a model to spread it over other industrial sectors. Do it to the auto companies. Take it to the chemical companies. Take it to the steel companies. And literally destroy the power of working people in the country.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right, and the reason I think you're right is that that's what they're doing. The facts all confirm it. None of the facts disconfirm it.
Well,
so
the latest,
what makes a scientific hypothesis true. There's only a confirmation of the pattern.
The latest, I guess, the GM, aside from the firing of the GM president, that's inconsequential to me. Maybe that's only to get somebody a little bit more compliant with them in the top job, but it doesn't matter.
Yes, and it's also a sacrificial cow. You know, I mean, we have basically a priesthood, sort of economic, mathematical, decoupled from the world priesthood, and they just make sure that nobody looks or questions the bank. I mean, and then they just carry on as before, preoccupying the public with magic tricks. And one of the magic tricks and distraction is, you know, it's as old as primitive religion, is scapegoat. That is, sacrifice a goat for the public. And people will then pay all the attention to that, as they have done. You know, they paid all the attention to the bailouts, paid all the attention even to the bonuses, which is one-tenth of 1% of the amount of money they've given out. And so you just distract them with one little spectacle after another, and I think that's, you're right, that the GM firing is both a spectacle, scapegoat spectacle, to expiate, or to, you know, purge the feelings of rage in the population, and also a warning to everybody else that this is the new order. The new world order is where there are no labor protections at all, even at home.
And they come up with contrived reasons. As far as GM goes, they say, well, you know, you came to us for billions, we gave it to you, now you're coming back for more billions. Well, now you have to, if you want something from us, well, now you need to make a sacrifice. Well, it's not the company executives that'll make a sacrifice. It's the workers that'll make a sacrifice.
Yes.
Well, the workers won't cause any problem. The workers...
In wartime, they use the excuse of the national cause.
Oh, the
to continue it's launching down the black hole and everybody with it. Yeah, it really is. That's why I use the cancer model, was that it really does behave like a cancer. It is utterly, you know, it has no committed function to the life host. It multiplies itself without inhibition. It occupies and moves and metastasizes across all the actual life functions of the body. And, of course, it's not reprogrammable. And, you know, all we've really gotten now is, even on the level of public pronouncements, is more of the same. Make it continue like it was. Only now it's going to even be better than what it was.
Sooner or
later. In terms of having no liabilities, this is it, you see. The banks are full of liabilities. They never talk about that. And so are the corporations. So you just eliminate all their liabilities. So the idea that you say it's a financial 9/11 in a way, it's a strategic plan to empty the coffers of the public into their own pockets and to get the discipline for money sequences. Because behind everything, there's a ruling law of motion of this carcinogenic metaprogram. And that is to turn money into more money for money managers and possessors. And that is always the logic of every decision that's ever made, including by, as we see, by the government. And it's interesting, even though that's very kind of clear and straightforward, that law of motion, I've personally, you've had to discover it, even though it's obvious. And of course, it's never named, never identified anywhere on the mass media, and that's how a cancer succeeds. The surrounding cellular community cannot make out that this is a program of destruction. And that's because we're full of cancer cells all the time, but our immune systems pick them off. The big thing about a cancer is that it can't be understood or can't be responded to, isn't recognized and responded to by the life host. And that's what's happening here.
Of course.
That's why I feel so badly, in a way, that I wrote this book 10 years ago, and then I just see all the model that was used, which is at the level of social life organization, the carcinogenic model. I mean, I'm dismayed, really, that it's all turned out to be terribly really terribly true.
And, of course, cancer eventually destroys the host.
Unless it recognizes it.
I guess medically there are curable cancers, so we put them in remission. But,
oh, yeah, you can. I mean, the thing is, I've had cancer, and I don't have cancer now. The key is for the host, the life host, to recognize. And it's an amazing system that goes on at the cellular level, and it's very clear how we do it. What we do is we understand what's going on. We understand what is the enemy within. And what the enemy within is this life-devouring money sequence, money into more money for money possessors and managers, and everything hollowed out to keep that sequence going. Once that's recognized, once that general framework is recognized, then the cancer code is recognized, and the body can go into immune response. And the immune response at this point, when the breakdown is so clear, is okay. Continue with the Constitution as we have, which has the power, the right, you know, the control over money issue and credit, and that this now becomes a public office, just like the income tax, which is very good at following money and making sure that people pay on time. It's a more difficult prospect than lending money, but it's the same logic, and it works very well, and that would be an immune response that would be successful, and it has all kinds of models that work. The private model of private control of a society's medium of exchange has never worked. It's always been destructive. You know, it's what founded the wars and all kinds of things. We can go and discover how everywhere it goes, it causes damage in the long run and maybe in the short run. So we just remove that. They're incapable of running the shop and that. They shouldn't have control of credit and currency and producing their own financial, basically their own money sequences out of their own money. You know, 95%, 98% of the money exchange medium under the financialization program is privately controlled. And so now they want the last few percent. This is the big run, the last few percent, and then get government to issue way beyond what it normally issues, and you control it all.
Oh, indeed. John,
that's part of the whole scheme.
Of course.
I've thought from the beginning, fine, the crisis shows they can't do the job. Return it to the public sector where it belongs, and everybody then gets credit that's reasonable. You get the same terms as you do in your income tax. Which is you pay on time, and you're not charged a lot.
I think their plan got a little bit out of control. I think they wanted to create this destruction that happened, but I don't believe quite as much as the way it's turning out, because the public is so drained that you could get these big banks healthy again. And who on earth are they going to lend to? Well, people can't borrow, nor are they credit worthy because they're so overextended.
Yeah.
We're losing not the reported number of jobs. The Labor Department tells us every month, but the true numbers are closer to 800,000 to a million a month since last November. The next report this Friday will probably show about the same thing. So Obama claims he wants to create 3 million jobs. I don't think he's created one so far.
Yeah.
And even if he did it, it probably would take a couple of years. Meanwhile, in 3 months, we'll lose those 3 million jobs plus all the rest. And how do you create jobs when you hand money to bankers who will use it for strategic reasons, certainly not to grow the economy? My theory, John, is...
No, they never have. Yeah.
Oh, well, back in 97, 98, just one example, there were others, that the Asian crisis, the so-called Asian contagion, that was manufactured. And the idea behind that was to crush these economies, bring them down, and give our corporate interests here, banks and other corporate interests, a chance to go over there and buy up assets on the cheap.
Yeah.
And I think this was the same idea on a much grander scale. Just for the banks, and I think the banks were the main players in this, the big banks, to get them flush with money, hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars.
Yeah.
God knows how much more they got that we never heard about, John. That's what bothers me the most. Maybe there's a couple of three more trillion that they got, and we were never told. I mean, they just keep rolling the press.
Yeah, they just exited the meeting on the same day as GM was having its manager, its CEO fired, and the debt being called. They had, and this was described by Obama himself with the banks, they had a very amiable meeting.
Yes,
it's obscene, isn't it? And I think, you see, Obama doesn't know the key to people getting into political office is that they know nothing about the economy. I mean, I've had a brother who's been a cabinet minister here and so forth, and that was one of the things I noticed, is that he didn't want to know anything about the economy and how it works, because that's the ticket of admission to be a politician. You cannot know, like, critically know anything about economics. If you do, and of course, the neoclassical system that, you know, is life blind, it doesn't really know about economics either, but it has a system of distraction, of multiplying symbols and so forth that nobody else understands, they think, and that they just can't get at. And so it's all a big mystical priesthood operation for Obama. So I don't think he's a vicious man. I think he's just completely bamboozled by these people. And that was clear from the outset when the people he chose for both Treasury and economics were really the people who had been responsible for the mess.
Exactly.
And in the case of very nasty pieces of work, in the case of Summers, I mean, he's a pretty virulent man economically. He's the guy who, you know, loved exporting toxic wastes to Africa because it didn't cost much to pay off the deaths that it caused. So this guy is a fanatic. And he's also said that economics means that the production and distribution of life goods otherwise in short supply through generational time. That's what economics is. This is not an economic system. It's an anti-economic system. In any case, he said the market is the creator of all value whatsoever, including literacy. He actually said that as president of Harvard. So when he's in his academic position, he's a fanatic, you know. He believes in, you know, like it's a version of the tooth fairy, but it's more like the demon, the devil. And that's just a dogma for him, as it is for this neoclassical theory in general. It's, you know, it's a system. It's a perpetual motion machine is the model. It has no principle. It has no principle of inertia built into it. It is literally a perpetual motion machine, is the neoclassical model. It's an engineering model that has no second law of thermodynamics, you know, where it runs down. So it's a magical model to begin with that's at the core of this whole thing. This is what I've been doing a lot of my work on, is getting to the core of this theory that we only see the downstream effects of. And then that locks into people's minds like and I call it a value syntax. It locks in like a grammar locks in when people learn a speech. They don't know what the rules they are that they're speaking and discussing in terms of. They're not grammatical experts because those rules govern preconsciously, like a syntax. And so these people live inside this syntax of value that they're very self-righteous about, too. They actually believe that the perpetual motion machine is a given. And they also believe that everything that you follow its motions, then everything in the world must be disciplined to be in accord with it. Or you don't have your economic fundamentals right. So it's a fanatic religion or magic thinking system right at the core of it. And then all the downstream effects spell out with all these people being, as you know, they're very moral. I mean, you know, if people don't obey these rules, they deserve to die. They'll also attack them if they try another system. So it's a very, very fanatic and primitive religion, but it's hidden inside the magic of numbers of a perpetual motion machine.
Oh, absolutely, John. And then they build up their iconic economic figures, and they hand them Nobel Prizes in economics, the Milton Friedman types, and make it seem Chicago School economics, not too far from where I live. And those are the hallowed halls of the best of all possible worlds and best of all possible systems, and it's all
fake. That's written right into the theory, eh? And I mean, the notion of the best of all possible world is that, and that's what optimize means. And that's always the term they use, optimize and optimal and optimum. And that means the best of all possible worlds. So it's built right into the scientific, so-called scientific theory.
And the truth, you call it a cancer. And another word that I think applies is just to call it a parasite.
Yes,
it's just,
except
it's
the parasite doesn't multiply and invade every part of the host, although, of course, you know, there are similarities. But what makes it more dangerous is the way it multiplies and metastasizes, from one part of the body to the other. The parasite doesn't normally do it. It just winds you down from within where it occupies. So, just in terms of its relationship with life organization, I find the carcinogenic model is the only one that matches its behavior.
I will trust your judgment on that. But
just with respect to life organization, yeah.
Oh, indeed. And, of course, it's sucking the life out of us and transferring wealth. And this didn't just begin in recent years. This has gone on for many, many years. I've written a number of articles on Alan Greenspan, John, and I went back even before he got
into
government.
He's an Ayn Rand fan, you know.
Well, he was in private business. He was a failure in private business. He had an economic consulting firm. He was a flop. He went out of business.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, he did. Oh, and people who knew him said, wait, I mean, this guy was a very marginal economist. He ended up in a government job, we need to take a break. His first big job was to transform the Social Security system to raise the payroll tax to get more money out of us, but put a ceiling on earnings so the big earners didn't pay on all their pay. It was only people up to a certain level, but this was this wealth transfer idea going back to the early 1980s. Again, we have to take a break, John, and we'll be right back.
This is RVM. The Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. A brief final segment, John. And I do hope you'll come back so we can continue this. This story... Basically, the big story of our time, the terrible crisis going on, this is not going away. This will be around for a very long time.
Yes, I think, and especially because of what we've been talking about in the last few minutes, about the demand factor having been hollowed out by this system. And that's why, it's had to fall back into government to create the demand factor. And as you properly say, but what happens when the government can't pour any more trillions into it, or does it just continue on? It can't. They can't solve the problem. They can't solve the problem until they see the problem, and they haven't begun to see the problem. They're just playing away at the margins. You know, it's always the individuals who are greedy or certain, and then they'll be scapegoated, or it's certain bonuses that have caused it, even though they're a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of 1%, et cetera. So they just play around on the phenomena end of it, to which we're always distracted. So there's no system understanding whatsoever, and certainly no value system understanding. And the big, you see, why it's so historically appropriate is what we needed to do. You can almost see it as a divine intervention, if that's the way you think. Because how are you going to stop this carcinogenic system? It has to fail from within. And of course, it does fail from within when it holds out the demand factor and then everybody's unable to pay their debt. And that's what, in the simplest terms, has occurred. And, the only solution to it is what Americans are incapable of, except with their military, and that's the problem of culture. But the only solution to it, which the original founders knew more about this kind of thing than now, I mean, Jefferson knew that bankers were more dangerous than, as he said, more dangerous than standing armies.
Oh, indeed.
That just as under the Constitution, the creation and control of currency, the medium of exchange, returns to the public sector where it should be. The private sector isn't allowed to just, even Friedman, back in the 30s and his group, they didn't think banks should be able to lend out any more money than they had. I mean, they're just lending out money they don't have, therefore creating the money by debt charges. And until, I mean, everybody knows this thing doesn't work. On the other hand, nobody seems to know it. And until you revert to the public sector to actually run the shop, because they're the only ones capable of taking, you know, dealing with a medium of exchange that everybody uses without the bias towards their own interests of multiplying private money forever at everybody else's cost, until they do that, it'll never be solved. And this is the drama we see playing out in front of us. And then prior to being able to solve it, they have to recognize what the problem is. And that's where, again, I go back to the model of the carcinogenic invasion, that the host does not recognize the invader. And we still don't recognize the invader. Until we recognize the invader, then we're not going to be able to repel it, or not going to be able to constitutionally organize so that they no longer can attack the life host, which is human society.
I guess we don't want to recognize the invader, John. The system is a sweet honeypot for them. And as long as they can suck all of this massive wealth out of it, then why worry about it? And you take all that you can get while you're doing it, and then you move on, you retire, whatever you do, and someone else comes in. And if you create a greater problem, then, well, that's for them to worry about. I'll be off fishing somewhere. My goodness, the program is over. You will come back and we'll continue this, right?
Okay, Steve.
John, it was a great pleasure again. I greatly appreciate you coming on. This is big stuff. We just have to keep hammering away at it, and we certainly will. Tomorrow we have an archive repeat again on Friday. We'll be back next week. I believe four live programs next week. Join us then.